Welcome back to another episode of Vanguard Radio. I'm your host, J. Richard Jones. Today we're going to talk about the CSC project, otherwise known as the Canadian Surface Combatant Project. It's been talked about for quite a few years now, and as we know, recently the contract has been awarded, and work will commence in the early 2020s with an expected delivery of the first of 15 ships by the mid-2020s. In February 2019, the Government of Canada confirmed that the bid from Lockheed Martin Canada has been selected for the design of the CSC, which is based on the BAE Systems Type 26 Global Combat Ship. Lockheed Martin is partnering with BAE Systems, CAE, L3 Technologies, MDA, and Ultra Electronics in offering the Royal Canadian Navy an advanced and modern warship design. Part of this solution includes Lockheed Martin's Canada's internationally renowned and Canadian-developed combat management system, the CMS-330. Today, we've had an opportunity to welcome our guest, Gary Fudge, Vice President and General Manager of Lockheed Martin Canada. We have an opportunity to chat with him about the CSC project and the CMS-330. Gary, welcome to Vanguard Radio.
Thanks, Phil. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great to have you. Gary, the National Shipbuilding Strategy has really brought to the forefront innovation in the marine and shipbuilding space for Canada. It's great to see government and industry seeking to work together to build a robust industry in Canada. You've been with Lockheed Martin since the 1980s, and you've probably seen a lot and would have a very unique viewpoint in what we're seeing today in terms of progress and innovation in this space. Can you share with us what you remember and what it was like 30 years ago compared to today?
Yeah, I started with Lockheed in the early 80s, and we originally did the Canadian Patrol Frigate for the Canadian Navy. We were the combat systems integrator. And of course, we're in a different landscape completely than we are today, in the sense that the technology was, in a completely different spot altogether. Our system at that time was built upon closed architecture, where we had a contract with the U.S. Navy where we built all their computing systems for their Navy ships. And of course, we leveraged that into the Canadian technology, which was the program we did started in the early 80s. And, back in those days, you had to invent everything. You got very little reuse out of software, for example. And if you needed a certain feature, you had to go and recreate it or, create it new. So in today's world, of course, we're leveraging off-the-shelf technology in many, many cases. And you can extract a lot of technology from commercial use that you could not do back in the 80s. So, the landscape from a technology perspective is completely different. And, there are many similarities too. So it's, a large complex program. Communications is key amongst team members. You need a lot of collaboration amongst team members to make things work. And the complexity just becomes overwhelming. And, the project is all about solving issues, solving problems, keeping your partners informed so everybody has an opportunity to participate in solutions. So even though, we got a lot of differences, we got a lot of similarities. So it requires large teams across many countries, different cultures, different languages. And trying to pull all that together is really the challenge of, managing one of these programs.
That's so true. We hear that about a lot of projects. I mean, technology is certainly a game changer, especially the way AI is being implemented into a lot of things these days. But when I speak with our clients across a number of different readership and listenership communities, they always come back to the issue of communication and teamwork, process and application, because you're only as good, the technology can be great, but if you can't communicate it and apply it, you really do yourself a disservice. It sounds like just about every project you did all those years ago kind of was unique unto itself and had to be built one project at a time. One that comes to mind is the Halifax class combat system. From my understanding, it was pretty sophisticated and a most challenging project. And Lockheed Martin was able to harness the existing technology that RCN had validated. It was a serial data bus and a set of nodes that were capable of forming a dynamic distributed process system, which set a new foundation for combat system integration. How did that come about? What was the genesis for the CMS-330?
That was the project I had referred to back in the early 80s. So we got under contract in 1983, and our job was the combat systems integrator, which meant we were pulling all the combat systems together, producing the software which made one cohesive system and allowed you to do everything from fire missiles, detect targets, track aircraft, track submarines, give the operator capabilities and features, and so on and so forth. So when we were under contract, we discovered, that a lot of work had been done by the Royal Canadian Navy. And there was an individual, Dr. Jim Crothers, who, had headed up a large research team within the Defense Research Establishment that was operated by the Navy. And they had spent 7 or 8 years developing this serial data bus technology. So the concept was, you'd have a serial data bus and a set of nodes that could operate off that bus, and these nodes are effectively computers. Then each computer, could do whatever function required, but the beauty of that solution was those computers could share data across the serial data bus. So what that did, that was it doesn't sound like much today, but back in those days, that kind of didn't exist. It certainly didn't exist on a warship. And what it did, it opened up a whole new set of doors for developing new features or enhancing existing capabilities for the customer. For example, you had a radar system and you're detecting targets and threats out in the environment. All that data could be shared with every other system on the data bus. So not only now do you have the power of the radar working for you, you can go and combine that with what targets or similar targets may be detected on an electronic warfare system. So now you can take those two targets, compare them, and allows you to fuse the data in such a way that you're optimizing your detection. So not only are you detecting the target, you're getting a very precise location on where that target is. And of course, with this data bus, you could provide data from one sensor to another operator. So an operator who's working, in one function, he or she may need a critical piece of data from another system where in a legacy or historical system, you could not get that data over to them only through voice. And of course, voice is often too late in a threat environment. But in the system that we were tasked to build, this data would be sent electronically, automatically, and that operator would have that data available instantly to help make decisions. And one of the final features would be the system then, had so much data and so much power relative to the previous generation that we were able to build software and tools that helped us decisions for the operator. So that was something that was relatively, new at the time, where, system, you can literally sit back in that system, you put system in automatic mode, and the system would defend the ship against all threats. So that was quite a revolutionary concept at the time.
Well, it sounds like it was really pioneering, really. I'd be curious, though, over the years, the technology curve has just been so fast. Were there a lot of challenges in being able to adapt new technology into the system?
One of the challenges we had, with a legacy system is that you have a closed architecture. And what that means, the information that one system has is typically not shared in the public domain to industry. So that means every industry partner are building their systems independently without knowing what other systems are doing. So the job of the integrator becomes critical. Whereas in today's world, a lot of the information will be shared publicly so that when I'm developing a system, I already know what everybody else does. And I know how to use data. I know what format they need the data in. If we go back to the 80s, that wasn't the case. I did not know what format or what type of data another system was producing. And if I wanted to use that data, it became quite an exercise for me to obtain the data from the supplier, understand it, and then redesign my system to take advantage of that data. That made integrating new products into that legacy system, it was probably easier than any other legacy system because you could put it on the data bus and make it that once you got it working there, it was available all across the system. But the challenge was, getting all that key data, again, communications being critical, where you get all that key data from a supplier and get the timing down and, what format the data was in and what messages were going to come and was there a sequencing on those messages that was critical. And that would take a lot of time and that would take a lot of effort to validate that once you design and build a system, have a long path ahead of you, validating all the timing and all the sequences of that messaging. So it was, very difficult to integrate new systems on those legacy platforms. Whereas we move up today, we have open concepts, open architecture, where, when somebody new produces a system, they produce it to a standard that you can pretty much connect it, to the system. And you got a little bit of work to do, but you're pretty much ready to go. So quite a difference in technology, from 30 years ago to today in that regard.
Certainly makes the job a lot easier today, I would think.
Definitely. And we had the advantage, we actually upgraded our system in the late 2000s, 2008 to 2010 timeframe. So we did another project for the Canadian Navy where we were going to build on the legacy system, but they developed a requirement such that it would not qualify. And we therefore had to kind of throw away all our technology, go into a room, get the whiteboard out and start over. Of course, the beauty of that is that by that time we had 25 years of experience and we knew how these systems needed to operate. We knew what the warfighting capabilities were. We knew what was critical in a system. And, we really understood the Canadian doctrine and how the Canadian Navy needed to fight these ships. And so we went, we had the advantage of, throwing away old technology and starting with a brand new clean slate. We're able to bring in new computing systems off the shelf with open architecture and start completely from the bottom up and design and build a new system. Of course, the risk is that, you have to make that system work. But of course, it's history now in the sense that that system has long been deployed for the last 4 or 5 years and is out there and is working like a charm. So, the risk that we had, we managed that and mitigated it. And, we were able to produce a fantastic system in CMS 330. But the crux of all that is that we came out of that exercise with a new system built completely on open architecture and open principles. And unlike a lot of our competitors, we did not build that on top of a legacy system. So when you build on top of a legacy system, from here forward, now you're carrying that legacy system with you. Any restriction in that legacy system, you have to honor that restriction or constraint. Whereas in our system, we had the advantage of going to a brand new open architecture, scalable construct. And it is proven to be a fantastic system with regards to technical insertion and upgrades. It's just been great.
Well, the CMS 330, it's a success story for sure. And the hard work has certainly paid off. Gary, this technology is being used around the world by other navies as well, is it not? Can you tell us a little more about that?
It is. We started the Halifax program in late 2008. And by 2012, we had a product that was working, on board ship. It wasn't perfect. And we're not trying to pretend we came out of the gate with no issues and challenges. But we had the foundation of the system, validated and proven at that time. And we have many of the features that the system has today have been proven and validated as well. But we still had a long ways to go on completing the system. But in 2013, we went to an open competition in New Zealand where New Zealand, you know, they had a very similar program to the Halifax Class Modernization Project that Canada was just in the middle of. In New Zealand, you wanted to upgrade their frigates. They're a different type of frigates, came from a different supplier, you know, and had a different combat system. But New Zealand, you know, had very similar requirements to Canada. They're a small nation like Canada. They have a lot of coastline, a lot of, you know, ocean area to surveil, and don't have a lot of resources. They need a ship that can do a lot with a little, and very similar to Canada. And but they ran an open competition, and we competed with all the combat systems integrators from across the world. So it was, there was no restriction on you know, competing. You had to meet certain basic requirements to compete, but pretty much any established combat systems integrator would meet those requirements. So we went into that competition. It was, you know, based on technical and cost. And, you know, we had to put forward our best technology, which we did, which was based upon CMS 330. And, of course, we had to make sure our cost was competitive. And we've been on that program, and we won it. And then a couple of years later, we went to Chile in a very similar environment. Again, an open competition with you know, Chile had no link to Canada and no reason to select a Canadian product at that time. And, you know, we went to Chile and, you know, explained to them what our product did, and we were able to demo the product to them. And, you know, the open competition did take place again based upon technical and cost. And, you know, once again, we were able to beat all the world's leaders in combat systems integration, and we won that contract as well. We have another set of pursuits that we're in the middle of. I'm not going to talk too much about those, but we know today, you know, CMS 330 has become a very common brand name around the world and very well respected. The way the Canadian Navy operates certainly helps us in the sense that the Canadian Navy is very well respected for a lot of their capabilities as well. So, you know, when we're able to do demos and you know, foreign navies are able to get on board a Canadian ship with CMS 330, they start to see the power the system has and the scalability and the ease of upgrades, all the things that navies typically look for. And of course, the warfighting capability is just tremendous, especially for, you know, smaller nations that don't have a large defense budget, and they need to do as much as they can with, you know, the resources they have. So we have multiple pursuits in progress today, and, you know, we know that we will be selling this product for a long time to come.
Wow, it's great to hear international success stories like this, and that CMS 330 is doing so well. And, you know, congratulations to Lockheed and you and your team, for sure. In terms of staying ahead of the curve, can you share with our listenership and readership, what areas are you going to advance the CMS 330 over the next few years? Are there areas of technology or innovation that you can share with us that you're going to be investing in, especially around technology?
We have approximately 30 research and development projects we do every year. And out of that 30 projects, approximately 25 of them in any given year will be focused around CMS 330. So we've been investing in CMS 330, you know, for over 10 years now. In fact, our first investment in CMS 30 came in the 2006 timeframe, before the Halifax Class Modernization Project, where our parent out of the U.S., you know, recognized the potential here in Canada and the potential with our our technology and our know-how and the projects that the Canadian government was undertaking and the potential to export out of Canada. They have a lot of restrictions in the U.S. where they can't export. So we offer some, you know, an export capability that the U.S. doesn't have. They can export, but it's, you know, a much different process. So we were a very attractive component of the Lockheed Martin enterprise. And on the basis of, you know, the Canadian business coming up, the technology we had, the resource base we had, the exportability of products from Canada, the corporation made a large investment in Canada in the 2006 timeframe, where we started our initial development on CMS 330. And over a two-year period, we developed the core and the base of that system. And every year since, we've been investing, and we do roughly 25 projects per year. So what are some of the things we're looking at? We're looking at injecting voice-driven command systems into CMS 330. Now, will that technology survive and be used everywhere? No. Will it be used in certain places where it's convenient, where a user has their hands full of something else, whether they're maneuvering a piece of machinery or operating some control systems? Yes, where there's lower risk of, you're not going to use a voice command today to say fire a missile, you know, because there could be obviously some safety issues and misinterpretation. But we are perfecting that technology today, and it will be deployed on the ships here in the very near future, where, you know, basic commands, you know, up on the bridge of a ship will be done through voice. We're also looking at artificial intelligence in the threat detection area, where we already have a very capable system, but we're going to embed some learning capabilities. So you have a threat detection system that's, you know, looking at the environment and detecting, you know, weeding out targets on which ones are threats and which ones are not. And we're building some learning capability into that technology. So those are a couple of the areas where we're looking at today. But, you know, we do 25 projects a year. And, you know, are they all going to survive and make their way into the product? Absolutely not. You know, will many of them? Yes. I think probably equally as important, some of these technologies will start filling adjacent markets, you know, for Canadian industry as well. One of the things I didn't mention, you know, about our international business is that every time we win a contract as a systems integrator, we're taking several other Canadian businesses with us. So when we won in New Zealand, you know, several other Canadian businesses that are in our supply chain, they automatically came with us to Chile without any marketing efforts, without any investments, and the same in New Zealand. So, you know, when we win, there's a whole round of our partners in Canadian industry that wins with us.
So you're promoting international growth as well. It sounds like there's a lot of shared experiences that come through. I'm just thinking as you were going through some of the areas of innovation and where you're investing in the projects that you have going on, that's pretty aggressive, 25 projects like that per year. And I would imagine that is going to really benefit the design of a Canadian warship in the future, or I guess it's kind of ongoing, right?
It is ongoing, and so, you know, it's an incremental. We do not have a big bang approach. We do not have another generation that's 10 years out there that we're working towards, but our constant investment, you know, ups the game every day by a little bit. And with the scalability of the system, you bring a capability in and you're dropping some older capability. So we do not need a big bang to, you know, get a major growth in our capability. We can certainly add it in with the scalability of the system that exists. So over time, we're constantly adding new features, new capabilities, and, you know, basic things such as processing speed, you know, how long it takes to detect a missile, for example. Well, you can imagine, you know, that's a large focus for our Navy customer. You know, obviously you want to detect a missile as quickly as you can. And that whole process to detect a missile, you know, launch a counterattack and kill that missile, you know, that's shrinking over time. So, you know, one of our constant focuses is how do we reduce the time it takes to detect and kill a missile? And, you know, the operator will not see anything different in that process, but the process will work a lot faster. So, you know, we make a very large investment to shrink the time it takes to affect that kill chain. And, you know, we roll it out and the operator sees no difference in its tool set and features. So, you know, a lot of the work that takes place, a lot of the features, they're under the hood that, you know, users will not see an immediate visual effect. But when you're in a warfighting situation, you know, the time to detect and counter a missile is probably cut down, you know, to a third.
Yeah, so the performance and reliability is there. Gary, can you comment on the current status of the contract that you've been awarded? What are some of the next steps in the process?
We were awarded a contract in February of this year, so we're about 6 months in. We are getting towards the end of requirements reconciliation, which was the first major phase of the project. And the next major phase of the project is preliminary design. And we're now preparing our team for preliminary design. We laid a lot of groundwork. And during preliminary design, we'll be engaging more of our partners and suppliers. So we're at the point now where we're starting to reach out to suppliers to gather information on their systems. The solution has already been cast in stone, so to speak. You know, we know what systems we're using, but when we get into detailed design, we need a whole new level of detail to bring the system together and validate what we're doing. So we're at that point now where preliminary design will start this fall. Requirements reconciliation will be ramped down by the end of this year. You know, from there, preliminary design goes into critical design and the final design. And of course, that includes all aspects of the ship. It's not only the combat system. We're also responsible, you know, for the ship design with our partner, BAE. So when we add a new system on the ship, of course, we're taking into account all the ship parameters, such as space, weight, center of gravity, you know, number of cables, the power requirements, et cetera.
Wow, it's the future looks bright on this. One final question, Gary. How would you sum up the opportunity of working with RCN and some of the other parties that you've worked with over the years in terms of creating a truly Canadian solution?
If we look back when we did the original Halifax-class ship back in the 80s, I would say, you know, that program lasted approximately, you know, 12 years by the time the final ship was out. We look back and, you know, if we looked at the first 6-7 years of that project, I think anybody involved would probably describe the environment of working together as abrasive. So, you know, there's a tendency then to try to protect your work, make sure you were never contractually exposed. You know, that would be the focus of almost everybody in the loop. And probably 6 or 7 years in, you know, we kind of made a switch in mentality where in order for me to win, everybody in the loop has to win. I mean, it's no good if my product works and your product that I'm trying to incorporate in my system doesn't work. And it's no good if my product works, but the customer can't use it. So, you know, probably about 6 to 8 years into the project, we realized, hey, we've got to get away from an us mentality into a we mentality. And when we did that, it became a game changer for that project. In the sense that, you know, everybody started pulling together. We had recognized objectives. We had the joint objectives versus individual contracts and, you know, what we were trying to achieve. And we started to see the dividends. And, you know, in the last, you know, from year, I'm going to say 6 to 9, you know, the amount of progress that was made, it was just tremendous. And it was all due to the collaboration that we were able to achieve with our suppliers and our partners. Come along, you know, by the time we got to the Halifax class modernization in 2008, we recognized that out of the gate. And we started a partnership. Well, you know, rather than having a supply base, you know, we call them partners. And we truly treated them as partners in the sense that we still had traditional subcontracts, like we had 10 years earlier or 15 years earlier. But we brought these suppliers and we shared information with them. We let them know where the challenges were, which was kind of unheard of, that you would share your problems with your suppliers. Usually you're trying to hide your problems from suppliers because you don't want them to realize that they may be able to blame you for something at some point. So, but we shifted that mentality completely, and that we brought our suppliers and we shared the problems with them. Hey, here are the problems. Here's problems we're having with your system. Here's problems we are creating. Here's where we need to be together collectively. And it's amazing how well our supply base responded to that mentality. And, you know, then our customer also jumped on that mentality. So where we had, you know, previously had a customer who, you know, wanted everything contractual and you know, one of the very behavior that was not conducive to moving, get to the finish line, we now had a customer that was engaged, participating, helping make decisions, helping lay groundwork for future events and work. And then we had everybody pulling together, and you know, the energy that we were able to bring together was just tremendous. So by the time we got to CSC, you know, it is an outright partnership. So we have ourselves, BAE, CAE, L3 Electronics, MDA out of Vancouver, and Ultra Electronics out of Halifax are our main partners. And that allows us to, you know, bring a Canadian team with a lot of Canadian content and a lot of Canadian know-how and understanding of how the Canadian Navy works. And Irving Shipbuilding is the prime. And so together, you know, we're all working towards common goals with the Canadian Navy. And, you know, we expect the benefits that come out of that will be tremendous. And I think, you know, it's really going to be the cornerstone for the project.
Well, it certainly sounds like a great strategy. And once again, congratulations on being awarded this contract as well.
Thank you very much. We are, you know, proud to be offering the Canadian Navy such a robust, effective solution. The requirements are very high. We have built our system around a Lockheed Martin Raider that comes out of the U.S. Our U.S. Partners, they've done Raiders for the U.S. Navy for 50 years now. And of course, anybody that knows the Aegis Combat System will recognize that the heart of that system is the Lockheed Martin Raider. You know, and it's that type of technology we're able to bring to Canada, have Canadian suppliers participate in development of those products and manufacturing some of them here. You know, we're going to bring these capabilities to Canada, where Canada will, you know, will end up having the best ship in its class, not due to spending more money, but due to, you know, us being able to pull together existing technologies and understanding the Canadian requirements and how the Canadian Navy needs to operate and understanding. I think one of the key things, you know, as I said earlier, the Canadian Navy, this ship has a work up in the Arctic. And, you know, where you have water splashing on the deck and up on the mast and freezing everything up. And a month later, the same ship has to go work on the equator. It's going to the Middle East where, you know, you have temperatures of 40 degrees every day. And the same system with the same cooling and heating that was in the Arctic is the same system, you know, going to the Middle East. So the requirements are very high, and you know, what Canada needs to operate in all those harsh environments is a little different than most other navies. But fortunately, you know, we have the know-how and understanding of what that is, and we're able to bring it together very efficiently.
Sounds like it certainly walks the talk, or I guess sails the talk, I guess, or I guess if that would be the appropriate term. But I think it's excellent. It's great to hear Canadian success stories like this. You are listening to Vanguard Radio, and we have had the privilege to talk to Gary Fudge, Vice President and General Manager of Lockheed Martin, about the CSC project and CMS 330. Gary, thank you very much for coming on the show, and I hope you'll come back and keep us updated on the progress.
Thanks, John. It was my pleasure, and I'd be honored to make another appearance if it suits your calendar. Thank you.